Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, November 24th, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
Daphne, your boyfriend's waving at you.
My name is not Daphne, but I am your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Hey, it's Thanksgiving week here in the good old US of A, so my best wishes to all who will celebrate this Thursday. Despite the difficult times we face as a country, we also have lots and lots to be thankful for this year, huh? Today, I bring you part two of my conversation with Michael Briette. He joins us again this week to finish the conversation we began last week. As you know, this is part of my new series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. If you somehow missed part one of this charming and informative discussion, look for last week's podcast, number 88, in the podcast archive on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. And don't forget to visit Michael's site at studio1088.com. Oh, and the sound effects you'll hear throughout the interview in the background? Why, they are happily supplied by my housemate, Ginger the Dog. Today's podcast sponsor is Ropex. Hey guys, I want to talk to you a little bit about jizz production. For all of you out there who are worried that you are not making as much baby batter as you would like, or maybe you shoot a lot but it looks all anemic and watery, well, I have just the thing for you. The good folks at New Generation Labs bring us Ropex, the original Swedish ropes formula. Ropex is the natural way to increase semen volume, so that when you bust your nut, you'll have some nice ropey spunk spewing out your willy. Don't be misled by the outrageous claims of all those other bogus male enhancement products out there. Ropex is not a cure-all, mind you, nor does it claim to be, but it sure enough does what it says it will. Check out my product reviews page at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Scroll down till you find review 21. There you will see that I used Ropex myself. And like all of my reviews, I give you my unvarnished opinion. So if you're looking for a little help in the spooge production department, visit the Ropex website today. Look for their swell banner in the sidebar of my site.
Remember, he's your date for the night, so smile.
I'm going to do more than smile if I actually have a date tonight. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Michael, and thank you again for joining us. I've been dying to continue our conversation from last week. I was just so impressed with the dimensions of the discussion that we were having. I would like to continue from where we left off. And I notice that some erotic artists obviously create with words, but you have chosen a different path. Can we talk some about your chosen media?
Sure. I work in pastels. I mean, as opposed to working in the written word. Probably as evident from this interview, I'm not so good with the words sometimes.
Oh, are you kidding? You're doing fabulous.
But I'm a visual artist and I'm a visual person. I've been working with pastels for about 10 years, really seriously, probably. Uh-huh. For about, six.
Wow.
I used to work in oils, and they drove me crazy.
Uh-huh.
They take so long to dry, and you deal, uh-huh, with little brush hairs and stuff. Uh-huh. So working with pastels, I just absolutely love, because I can leave a piece, and I can come back to it at any time. I'm not worrying about paint drying or fast enough or, uh-huh, too slow. It kind of gives me the same effect. Often people are surprised that it's pastel and not oil paint.
Wow.
But it's really fun, and it also allows me to create much faster than with oil. I'm not waiting for things to dry in,
right,
between layers and such.
Right. I understand that you hold to the old adage that a picture or an image is worth a thousand words. Is that why you have created a project that you've dubbed the Thousand Words Project?
Yeah.
See how clever I am?
Yes. I mean, previously we discussed how, like, my pictures kind of try and tell a story.
Uh-huh.
And I actually had one of my fan of my work write a story based on one of my pictures.
Oh, no kidding. And, how cool.
And that kind of gave me the idea of doing this, so I kind of had a contest to invite any fans of my work or anybody else, professional or amateur writers, to take one of my pieces of their choice and write a story about it, and I got some great responses.
Okay.
And I'm currently working with a publisher, and hopefully we'll have something out soon.
Oh, my.
They're quite busy at the moment, but... I mean, maybe around the holidays. It might be a little early next year.
Uh-huh.
But I'm really excited about it. So I think it's going to be quite interesting.
The artwork comes first, and then you display it, and then you invite people to write the backstory or the forestory or...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's what I normally, when I release a piece on my website, I usually have a little narrative blurb to go along with it, just kind of a little background story. People can take that or leave it and create their own if they want or whatever. It's like, you know, if you got an idea, if this inspires you, because usually it's the other way around. The authors write a story and then they go to an artist to do a cover for a book or whatever.
Right. To illustrate.
Yeah, and I thought this would be an interesting twist to do it the other way around, because people seem to enjoy my little blurbs that I write,
yeah.
And people also have their own ideas, and it was quite interesting. I mean, there were some really great stories.
Is this an ongoing kind of thing? So, I mean, as our audience visits your site in coming days, that they will be able to participate if they would like
to? Well, I started it actually it was like about a year ago, maybe. Uh-huh. Maybe it was in December of last year I opened up the contest, and I wanted to have an ending date just so I wasn't constantly getting things after the fact. So I had a cutoff in May.
I see.
And then things kind of got hectic for me over the summer.
Right.
But anyways, then I got in touch with a publisher, and they seemed really interested in it, and so we've been taking those stories and... going to develop the book based on those, and you know, depending how it goes, I can definitely see myself doing this again.
Wow! Excellent.
Another edition.
And people, you know, can sign up for like a newsletter or something like that. From you
I usually have something going on now and then whenever I release a new piece, and I'll send out like a newsletter.
Cool.
From my website. Maybe twice a month or so.
Cool.
Usually letting people know what's going on and such.
Hmm. Nowadays, I think, at least comparatively speaking, erotic artists abound. Although in some circles, this genre is still not accepted as mainstream. Is that your experience as well?
Well, yeah, certainly. When it comes to anything... in the erotic genre, there's always going to be a kind of a segregation, whether it's in a mature section of the bookstore,
right.
Or you know, some galleries, just that's not what they carry.
Yes.
I've never really experienced denial, but and again, I don't usually approach places where I can already tell I'm not going to be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be coming a little more mainstream.
I think so too.
But you know, it's still definitely you know the uninvited cousin kind of a thing.
So true. Have you been on the receiving end of criticism for your work? I mean, you mentioned last week about a colleague who said that you had great talent. It's just really unfortunate that you spend a waste it on pictures of naked men.
Right. I mean, other than that, I mean, just little comments and such. I mean, it's never been anything that's really ruffled my feathers at all.
Uh-huh.
Like I also mentioned, I started out posting things on eBay, and
right.
I mean, definitely they have segregated section, but and some extent they have allowed nudity in their general section. Huh. And
again, if it's
while,
erotic, as long as it's not pornographic, because I know that they discriminate against out and out pornography.
Right, right, and always places like that, they always have rules which are very vague, you know, whether it's objectionable, and it's like, well, you know, a lot of things can be objectionable. It depends who you are.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I've gotten things bounced off of eBay, but usually I get them reinstated.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been hosting my stuff on there for years, and but I mean, recently I've stopped putting anything on there anyway.
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, I mean, usually, I mean, the people that find my stuff are looking for that type of stuff, so I don't really, you know, come across people, you know, with torches chasing me down.
I'm happy to hear. Is it possible for you as an artist to eroticize something that you personally don't find sexy?
That's interesting. I mean, I have some female friends that have asked me, you know, or suggested I do some female nudes or erotica, and I mean, I don't know if I could. I've never attempted to, but seeing that it's not exactly my passion, I don't know if it would come out right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would be able to infuse erotica into something that I don't find erotic.
So that, my follow-up question then is, do you believe that erotica is directly related to our sexuality, or can it be created apart from our sexuality?
I think it's definitely one and the same, pretty much. You know, it's, I mean, you can try, but I mean, I don't know if it would succeed.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I as you probably know, I've had a similar conversation with Moxie Hart, who was the first graphic artist that I've involved
right.
with in this series, and he was saying that, you know, technically he probably could technically create, you know, a pleasing image,
right?
But if it's it wouldn't be in imbued with the same life force as the stuff that he does with passion.
Yeah, right. I mean, the same with me. I mean, I could probably do puppy dogs and kittens, and they would probably be technically correct, but I don't know if it would have, you know, what the end result would be, if it would feel the same, you know?
Yeah. But you do include, along with the nudes that you create or the erotica that you create, you also place other things. I mean, there's references to nature and whatnot in
right.
your work. So, I mean, you are capable of doing that, it seems.
Right. I mean, and in a technical sense, I don't know if there's a comparable description for, like, landscapes as there are to, like, a nude or
right.
an erotic nude.
Right.
You know,
interesting, yeah.
If something is a landscape, it's a landscape, but,
yeah.
you know, where erotic is kind of this weird, kind of out there, undefinable element.
Yeah, and we struggle with that definition as this series and as our conversation has been showing. There's an obvious triggers, sexual erotic triggers in art, like fetish wear, corsets, jock straps, leather gear, breasts, nipples, penises,
you're
vaginas.
You're turning me on.
Language. This is payback for what you did with you being your model. So we talked about that last week. So payback time for you. Obviously, some certain language poses. Do you think that one can sexualize the blatantly unerotic, like nature and food and everyday clothing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly. Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, manipulating it in the right way.
Exactly.
I mean, if you look at my artwork, in a way, a lot of the scenes are, like, very, you know, mundane moments in somebody's life. And in a way, I've kind of taken them and kind of captured them in a frozen moment and kind of celebrated that. And it's kind of, you know, people seem to respond to it and find it sexy or erotic in some way. So, I mean, definitely you can kind of take anything and, you know, get the lighting just right and you know, make it sexy.
I love it. Do you look to work with a particular body type?
I mean, I suppose so. I mean, over the years, I mean, I've never really been conscious about my artwork in a way of like, well, I am going to only do this type of thing. But over the years, I've kind of noticed, you know, a trend of you know, seeing my work, body of work as a whole. I mean, I definitely gravitate toward the, you know, athletic and fit and slightly muscular male physique. So, I mean, I guess that's what I gravitate toward. And, but I never really consciously think. You know, just kind of that's what I do and that's what I like, and I'm celebrating the male beauty in my eyes. And that's how it comes out.
Are there topics that you gravitate toward, and topics that you may avoid?
Yes. I mean, things that I gravitate toward, I mean, just looking at my work as a whole, I mean, there's certainly, definitely a romantic theme through my work. I kind of like I like the couple pieces, but at the same time, I like, you know, I mean, it depends on my mood, and sometimes I'll do a very sweet kind of romantic piece, and I'll follow it up by something a little more, you know, provocative and in your face and sexual. As far as things that I avoid, I think I always try to present my images in an optimistic way, looking at, you know,
interesting, good, yes.
You know, being a gay man in the United States, I you know, I try to present an optimistic view of stuff. I mean, again, I definitely would avoid things that I don't find particularly arousing, I guess.
So hardcore kind of stuff, like, you know, do you actually do like sexually charged images, you know, erections and sexual acts? You depict those?
I mean, not as often as the other stuff. But sometimes the intent changes along the way. Sometimes I'll start out with an idea and it's going to be very provocative and sexual, and for some reason either it doesn't materialize as a finished work, or it sometimes will get kind of a little more subdued, a little less in your face. I'm not really sure why, but other times it can be pretty much in your face.
But you don't shy away from that necessarily.
No, I actually try not to shy away from it. I think, you know, it's all part of sexuality. I mean, look at, like, Tom of Finland is probably much more sexually charged overall, though there are some pieces that are just more, you know, clothed, even portrait-type pieces. And then on the other spectrum of, like, gay artists, there's Stephen Walker, who generally is not that in-your-face sexually. I think I kind of gravitate between the two, so I don't know if you want to say I'm all over the place, but you know, I don't kind of think one is not good and one is you know, better than the other. Right. It's all part of sexuality, and I just try to represent what I'm in the, you know, what I'm feeling at the time. And
what do you look for in works of erotic art by other people?
I don't know if there's any specific thing. I it's just a matter of what I connect with. Sometimes it can just be a visually pleasing piece, without any kind of like message or anything. Other times it's like, you know, you get that kind of more of an emotional connection and something you can identify with. I think in overall that's why people gravitate toward a piece of art is
right.
in some way they can identify with it, or it, you know, it connects with them mm-hmm. on some level. So I don't have any particular criteria.
Right.
It's just a matter of...
But you know good stuff when you see it.
I know what I like.
That's a nice dodge. Good for you.
I think artists are probably the worst art critics.
Ah, and maybe that's just as well.
Yeah, I think so. Or else we would never get anything done.
That's like the old adage, you know, those that can do and those who can't are critics.
Right.
Listen, I know from my conversation earlier with Moxie Hart that you were a huge inspiration in his life. Your encouragement and support propelled him to be the success that he is today. And he's enormously grateful, and I think that's a wonderful testament to you that you could actually involve yourself with another artist and not have like professional jealousies and actually encourage another person to be successful. Good for you.
Oh, thank you. yeah, I mean, I listened to the interview.
Ah, yes, thank you.
A couple days ago, and I was thrilled. I mean, it's odd. I mean, for me to feel like I had that much influence on an individual, but I'm constantly getting emails from people who find my work and somehow or some other way they get inspired to do something, or just kind of. Sometimes they just say it kind of justifies their existence. Some very tragic stories.
Yes.
But yeah, it's very moving to feel I have an influence on people, and
it's
very humbling.
Yes. Who inspires you?
Oh gosh, I mean, a lot of people. It's strange because it's like been such a long process, and it's always, you know, different artists I discover over the years and had an influence in some way. Some may seem odd. I mean, for a time I just loved Patrick Nagel's work.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar.
I do.
Okay. And I mean, it was just very different from what I do. I mean, one of the more recent ones, when I started doing the more erotic art, I really found myself very interested in the artwork of Bo.
I don't know that.
B-E-A-U?
You'll have to turn me on. B-E-A-U.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that up.
And, I mean, it just has, I don't know what it is, it's just something I connected with and really enjoyed, and it gave me inspiration, and... I was thrilled. I got an email from him a couple years ago when my book came out, which was it just kind of blew me away that he knew of my work and enjoyed it. And you know,
it's always great to know that you have a big audience. I mean, I'm enthusiastic about that myself when I hear people saying, you know, I've listened to your podcast and you know, you've made a difference in my life, and that's really good to hear.
Yeah, and it's you know, there's a lot of artists. I don't know if you know Tom Jones.
No.
I had some contact with him many years ago when I first started out, and he saw my stuff on eBay, and he had done illustrations for like the gay magazines for years. He has his work is very very masculine. It's oil paint. It's very beautiful.
Mm.
But yeah, there's tons of inspiration from all over the place.
I'm gonna pause here. I just want you to know that the dog is providing all the background sounds, all those yummy sounds. She's amazing. Any sexual heroes that you want to tell us about?
Sexual heroes. What would a sexual hero be exactly?
Well, for me, you know, people like Kinsey is a sexual hero, somebody who... And his colleague Wardell Pomeroy, and in fact Wardell directed my doctoral thesis, And so I feel like I have this intimate connection with Dr. Kinsey, at least one person removed. So, I mean, he's a big hero for me. And some people have, you know, heroes along those lines, and others that didn't. But I thought I would ask.
I've never really thought of that. And definitely anybody who's kind of, you know, just comfortable in their sexuality and, you know, kind
isn't
of...
Isn't it the truth?
You know, can just be themselves and, you know, forget any kind of restrictions society puts on you or whatever, and just kind of, you know, be comfortable and enjoy your life and however you want to be.
That is absolutely heroic in our culture, absolutely.
You know, so anybody who falls in that category is definitely somebody I would, you know, look up to. I know it's not easy. So
absolutely. What does the future hold for you and your work? Any new projects coming up?
There's always I'm always producing stuff, so I'm always trying to you know keep creating and I mentioned that my book came out was published by Bruno Gmunder Publishing in 2007. So, I mean, definitely would like to do another one at some point if they would like to. I just got an invitation from a photographer, Hector Gonzalez.
Ah.
I think that's his name. Rodriguez. I'm sorry, I just got the email today. Hector Rodriguez. He's doing a photo shoot. He wants to do it for DNA Magazine.
Wow.
And he wants to do a piece inspired by my artwork where he would do, like, photographic versions.
Interesting.
He invited me to participate with that. So that sounds like fun. I mean, there's always little things dropping into my lap.
I guess so.
You know, some of them appeal to me, some of them don't, and to see what develops.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I know that
you're hit up all the time for advice. So let me add to that. Do you have any advice for the aspiring erotic artist?
Oh, it's always a painful question.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just got to do what you want to do, and I mean, if it's your passion, hopefully, you know, things will turn out and happen for you. I mean, people will connect with your artwork and sense that you're passionate about it.
Well, that's what Moxie said that you said to him. I mean, it was, you know, jettison all the other stuff and go for what makes you live and breathe. I mean, that apparently did the trick for him.
I had a job, you know, a traditional, you know, work for the man kind of job. And I was doing my artwork at the same time. And, I was making money off of it at this point. I just reached a point where I was, you know, it was definitely more fun to do the artwork, and the real job was taking up my time. And, you know, I mean, I took a, you know, I lost income by quitting my job,
right.
But you know, ultimately, you know,
you gained
what I want to do,
and, probably though.
Yeah. I don't think there's any like. Single answer of if you're an erotic artist and you want to be successful, you got to do this and this.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's there's nothing out there that's gonna be, you know, a surefire thing. I mean, I'm still trying to discover what it is myself. You know, each little thing, you know, exposes you a little bit more to somebody else, and you know, that leads to something else, and basically that's how my whole career developed. I started in, you know, just having a small website, and then, you know, I put a few things on eBay, and then some people discovered it there, and then like the artist Tom Jones that I mentioned, he saw my work and he suggested, oh, you should start making prints of your work, and then, okay, so I started doing that, and then, you know, which allowed my artwork to be visible. Like if I posted something, you know, on eBay for sale or something, it wasn't like an original with the first one buys it and then it's gone forever. Yes. Then, you know, the prints were there, they got exposure, people kept seeing them. And then, you know, I got approached by one of the editors at Blue Magazine from Australia.
Yes.
And then they featured me in a section of their magazine, and, you know, and then that led to something else. I think that's when the Bruno Gmunder Publishing discovered my work, and, you know, then they invited me to be included in their stripped book that they put out, and then that led them to offer to do a whole book of my work, and, you know, and then, you know, and then everybody's, you know, I'm... you know, getting exposed to a lot more people, you know, all the time. And, you know, things just kind of grow from there. But, you know, you got to just be passionate about what you do.
And take yourself seriously, would you not say? I mean, believe in yourself, would you not say that that is like a foundation?
Yeah, definitely you have to believe in yourself. And another thing you have to do is kind of just, like for me, I concentrate on my artwork as one separate thing. And the business side of it as a completely, well, almost completely other entity. Because I've found that you can't paint something that's going to be successful or sell a ton of prints. You can't approach it like, oh, I need to do something that's going to sell a lot.
Right.
You just got to do your artwork separately. And for me, I always paint for myself. I'm my own art audience.
Yes.
And luckily people respond and resonate with what I do. And then I, you know, I take that and put it to the business side where I'm just trying to find exposure for it.
Huh.
You know, you can't go into it thinking I want to be successful. And, you know, I got to paint things that are going to sell. It's
right.
just, you know, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Because we call that prostitution.
Which, you know.
Not a bad thing, necessarily. I don't use that in a pejorative sense of the word, that's for sure. Listen, before we conclude, can you give us your website address and walk us around a bit?
Well, there's a few addresses, but it's the same place. There's studio1088.com. That's studio1088.com. And then there's briette.com. which is BREYETTE.com. You can also try michaelbriette.com.
We'll have a bunch of those. We'll have a bunch of those on the posting, so
it all
audience
gets to the same place.
Don't have to scramble to write this stuff down.
Right. Let me go slower for you all while you get a paper and pencil. actually, my website is going to be having a big revision shortly. Mm-hmm. But right now, I mean, basically there's the news section. That's where I post anything that's going on or anything I'm doing. And there's the gallery, which has, you know, all of my artwork that I'm offering. And you can purchase prints and different size prints depending, you know, on your space and your pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then there's the usual, you know, information about me. I have a link to my blog. I offer free e-cards, you know, if anybody wants to send my artwork as an e-card
to
their significant other or whatever. It's your basic website.
Yeah, sounds considerably more than that. So I understand that we can buy your work directly through your site, yes?
Yes, yes.
Cool.
And with the, I mean, it's fairly simple, like I mentioned, coming up, there's a whole new version of the website, which will hopefully make things even easier and work better. You can take, I take credit cards and checks and money orders and, you know, whatever you want.
Excellent. Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you for
ahead. If I can mention Lyman Iyer Gallery in Provincetown.
Uh-huh.
Carries my originals.
Oh, no kidding.
There's a gallery in Fort Lauderdale, Florida that carries a few prints at the moment. I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce this right. It's the Lecce Vitrines Gallery.
Wow.
And they have some of my prints as well. For most of you out there, you can always go to the website.
thank you again for so much of your precious time. I appreciate it. And 2 weeks in a row, that's great. Now, get back to work, damn it.
or as my boyfriend likes to say, eat bonbons and watch my stories.
Exactly. Well, kiddo, we'll be seeing you in cyberspace.
Alrighty.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Wow, what a great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick.
Why do I let you talk me into these things? Why?
Maybe because we're the best of friends. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Ropex. Say, I know a lot of you guys got it in your head that the amount of cum you produce and the velocity of the money shot you shoot are somehow associated with virility. Well, I don't buy that logic necessarily, but who among us doesn't like a nice puddle of dickwad to play with and admire? Ropex can help you boost the volume of your ejaculate and thus increase the orgasmic contractions you make, giving you a whole lot more pleasure. I am happy to recommend Ropex to anyone who worries about puny spunk production. Again, I invite you to check out my review of Ropex on the product reviews page at drdicksexadvice.com. Look for review number 21. I suppose you also know that Dr. Dick's podcasts are available on iTunes. Once you're in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. And while you're there, feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? That's even better. Over and out.